Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good, whatever you do, 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 Lord, Lord.
Happy Friday, everybody. It's time for Express Yourself on KDNK Community Radio. My name is Brian Colley, and I'm joined with Stacey Dickerson. Oh, I haven't turned you on yet. You're number four.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we've got a great show coming up. I think at the end, Amy Kimberly, Miss Moon, will be here with Luke Nessler to talk a little bit about a Mountain Fair podcast coming up to celebrate the 50th year. After, and in the middle, we're going to have a conversation I had with some Anderson Ranch artists about a show at their gallery. But first, I'm excited to have Bob and Kathy Ezra here from the Crystal Theater. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Maybe
get up a little closer.
Okay. Yeah.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So, Bob and Kathy, you have had a little vacation from the Crystal Theater. How long have you been offline?
15 months.
15 months? Mm-hmm. We've been without a theater? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. No wonder I'm so insane. So, when did you close then? You must have closed in March or something?
It was March 13th.
Wow.
Yeah, 3 days before the governor shut the state down, basically.
Right. That was around the same time that we closed down at Carbondale Arts for the fashion show. Yeah, so wow. Wow.
Yep.
So, so you're opening tonight, reopening tonight.
Wow.
That's super exciting. Tell me, are you going to be open during, like just on the weekends for a while or?
Yeah, we're kind of doing a soft opening Fridays through Mondays to start.
Great.
Just kind of, you know, getting back into it slowly.
Great. Now, when did you open the Crystal Theater in the very beginning, Bob?
The very beginning. We opened it in July 18th, 1985.
Wow.
A little bit younger than KDNK.
Yeah. And KDNK opened in 83. Sounds Easy mm-hmm. opened in 83.
Oh, well, wow. Yeah, while I was working on the theater, I also built you a counter.
That's right. That's right. Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's
I remember
crazy.
That.
Crazy. So tell me, do you remember what the first movie is that you played on that July? Yeah,
The Breakfast Club.
Oh,
my gosh.
The Breakfast. I just get chills.
Classic.
And was it new that in that
yes.
year?
Yeah, we didn't know. We just kind of said, oh, this one sounds interesting. Let's give this one a shot.
That's a good one. And yeah. As I recall, you have a poster with signed by everybody, all the stars in the Breakfast Club hanging in the theater, don't you?
Yeah. Our son Brian and daughter-in-law Marie got it as a gift for our 30th anniversary, birthday.
Wow. Yeah.
Theater anniversary.
Yeah.
Theater anniversary.
Right. Exactly.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
What a great trip. What a great thing. You have been at this for now with the exception of those 15 months. What is that, 35 years?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow, that's
it'll be
really
36
great.
This July.
Wow, and which is just around the corner. Do you have in all those years? Do you have any favorite movies that I know you have a lot, but any that float to the top as always in your top 10? Are they the same for both of you?
Probably not.
And they change, you know.
Yeah.
I think. And some of my favorites are from the really early years.
Yeah.
Like the two of my favorites, they were both French films, Jean de Florette and Manon of the Spring.
Oh,
it's
my
like
God.
Yeah, we agree on those.
You don't see them offered very often.
Yeah.
On any services, but I would watch it in a flash. If
yeah,
I
and
could
they were big, big screen, very visually
just so
really
cinematic
good.
And such yeah. great characters.
Yeah, I love those J.R.
Depardieu. Who then,
yeah,
yeah.
He was a little slimmer then.
He went downhill after that.
Yeah, he yeah. did. He did. After he didn't have to walk up and down that hill for that trickle of water
right
anymore.
With his little hunch
yeah
back. So,
yep.
Yeah, there have just been,
you know, if you think of moments, there have been a lot of good moments at the theater. For example, I liked, one of my favorites was we were showing Ghostbusters in the early
oh,
days.
Cool.
And at the end, you know, they had the theme music, Who You Gonna Call, and the audience as one would call out Ghostbusters. That was really cool.
That is great.
And it was a big audience that night too. Yeah,
I bet. Oh my gosh, I was probably in that because I remember doing that, and I remember the thrill of watching Ghostbusters. What a great movie.
Well, and the other one is Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I guess we
that's,
do agree.
That's in the top five.
Yeah,
yeah. We've shown that three,
never
four
get
times.
Tired of that.
Wow.
We showed it as a benefit for Katie and Kay one
yeah.
time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, that is a that's a good one.
And the soundtrack is so incredible on that one. Everything was so good on Stop Making Sense. Mm-hmm. It was really good. I have to say that, you know, some of my favorites, and they probably are yours too, Cinema Paradiso.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That goes without saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mission.
Oh, yeah.
Henry V.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of them are, you know, if I was looking at current titles, I could tell you, but...
I didn't...
We're looking at all of, you know, the first couple of years' titles, the first 10-year titles. Strictly Ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
Ballroom,
a good one.
Definitely, yeah.
Was that one of the ones that had the longest legs?
You know what? No, you know what it was? And I don't know why still, is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, interesting.
That one went on and just was, we had to do multiple shows. It was crazy.
Wow. Wow.
And another one was, another, maybe a really long playing one was Waking Ned Devine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I remember that. That
yeah,
was so good,
that was
too.
A good one, yeah.
I think I saw that. We did a little movie, Zoom movie club during the pandemic, and we chose that one, Waking Ned Devine, and it was so great to see that again. It's been 20 years or 25 years or whatever since I've seen that,
yeah,
and
that
it was so much
one.
Fun to see it again. Do
we
you
liked,
know
we liked Snatch a lot, the
Snatch.
Brad Pitt
oh
movie,
yeah
mm-hmm.
yeah
where it was done by Michael Ritchie, I think.
Guy Ritchie
who was
sure.
Madonna's ex,
yeah
uh-huh.
and he had done Lock, Stock, and
Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh,
and
yeah.
the rub on that movie was that nobody could understand.
Mm-hmm.
So they put this Brad Pitt character, and you could not understand a word he said. He was this Irish boxer. And we loved it, just
that's right.
not knowing what he was saying. It was, but he did it on purpose, you know, the director. I thought that was kind of...
Yeah, that's
but
great.
That was a good movie.
I didn't give you any heads up on what we were going to talk about, but I wonder, so you probably don't have this in your head, but over all those years, do you know how many films you've shown?
Wow, good question.
I don't have that number. You'd have to go to the film archive on the website and
oh yeah,
count.
It's out there year by year.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool to know about.
And yeah, we have every film we've shown.
Whoa.
And links to them if you want to check them out. And, you know, when COVID first started, we reposted that on Facebook and
uh-huh.
stuff just to give people a chance to revisit
yeah.
stuff they liked or take a chance on something that they
oh
missed.
Oh, my gosh. I missed that. I am going to your website.
And what is your website?
It's crystaltheatercarbondale.com.
And how do you spell theater? Is it with an
R-E?
It's
R-E.
Yeah.
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
Sure. Let's talk
yeah.
about that. Tell me about that.
So that's kind of one of my, you know, how you have pet peeves. That's one of my pet peeves.
Uh-huh.
The convention for movie houses was always R-E. If you look at any classic movie houses, it's R-E. And then just people started to get lazy, and they, you know, so you see, like, you know, they go E-R in, like, I think ISIS might, for example, go ISIS Theater, E-R now, when they were, for many years, R-E.
Oh, it just doesn't sound
right. So it's
a
convention. It's not an affectation. It's an, you know, it's a...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think ER is more live theater.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Versus...
I never knew that.
Yeah. That's interesting. Well, I'm so happy that
it's obviously not a hard and fast rule.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not what?
A hard and fast rule.
So. Yeah. That's... So anyway, crystaltheater.com.
Crystal Theater Carbondale.
Carbondale.com.
Crystal Theater Carbondale.com. And you can get...
There's a tab for archives.
All the films that they've ever shown. Wow. Now, do you guys... I know you always cared very deeply for the posters that you got, and you kind of had a pretty good poster collection. Mm-hmm. Do you still have a pretty good poster collection?
Yeah, the industry term is one sheet.
Excuse me. Nice. One sheet.
I'm learning all kinds of stuff today.
Yeah. How do you have a good collection of one sheets and some flat files somewhere?
Yes. We do.
One of these days it's going to put your grandchildren through college.
I don't know. I feel like anymore they're like baseball cards, you know. They've just printed so many of them that they're a lot of them don't have the value that they had. I think maybe some of the early titles have value, like Cinema Paradiso, where they weren't printing, you know, thousands of them.
I was really surprised back in the day in the 2000s when I still was running Sounds Easy, and I had and things like Etsy and eBay were sort of starting to happen. And I always had one sheets as well at the video store, and too many of them actually, because I had so many films. But some of the kids that were working for me were taking the posters and selling them on eBay and buying their like their college books. I'm like, really? Oh, you could do something like this? I'm giving them away left and right. Yeah. You know, jeez.
Yeah, I didn't know they were worth that much.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if it's still that way, but I bet you guys have some really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, some like Across the Universe is a really hot one.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are really put together really visual. Nicely.
They're beautiful graphics. Yeah.
When we did the memorabilia sale back in 2013, when we did our fundraising for digital, we did we had offered a lot of one sheets.
Yeah.
And they did sell.
Yeah, people were going crazy for them.
Really. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And we offered a lot of good ones, and we try to keep at least one of what we thought were the important ones. Sometimes we had two or three, so we could, you know, sell a couple of them.
Yeah, tell me, do you guys are you going to try and bring in some of the films that we all missed in 2020? Are you going to bring some of those into 2021 in the opening? Do you have an idea of what kind of films are going to come?
We were thinking of Nomadland.
Oh yeah.
Even though, you know, it's been available for so long. But The Father was another one, only because of the rave reviews for Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, who doesn't like him?
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
And Minari, the Korean film that got a lot of accolades. You know, those are out there and they're available, so we might consider those.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And I think, what are you opening with tonight?
Dream Horse.
And that's, that has... what's her name in it?
Toni Collette.
Yeah. That looks really good.
Which was a big factor in playing it.
I bet.
Always good.
But she's Irish, isn't it?
Welsh.
She's
Welsh.
Is she
playing? She's Australian.
Yeah. Oh, she is.
Actually playing a Welsh barmaid. But supposedly the Welsh people are really happy with her accent.
Excellent. Excellent.
So that's important.
That is important.
You know, and it's interesting that it's based on a documentary that we actually showed in 2016 called Dark Horse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and I'm just surprised at how many people remember Dark Horse, because they'll read the synopsis in it, which happened to me when I read it. I thought, I feel like I've seen this
movie already. Did we show this movie already?
Oh, that's
and then
funny.
It, you know, it was revealed that it's a remake of that story. But
it's
with
fiction.
With Toni Collette, I feel pretty comfortable.
So we probably, that's exciting. So I unfortunately, we only have about 15 minutes or so to talk to you guys. And so I think we're coming to that time. But tell us what it's going to look like in the theater as you open up. What is that going to look like? Is it going to be different than we're used to?
I think there's a few things that everybody's used to from COVID, a sneeze guard on the concession and having wipes and sanitizer available. The auditorium doesn't mm-hmm. look that different except for the four high-efficiency air purifiers that we have in there.
Wow.
But, you know, it's mostly, you know, we're asking for proof of vaccination at the ticket window. Uh-huh. It's the only way to have enough capacity mm-hmm. to make it worth it for mm-hmm. everybody.
Yeah.
You know, if we were still doing social distancing, we'd be locked at 31 seats.
Right.
So we are going to start slow. We're going to open with 50 seats and see how it goes from there. You know, we'll increase shows or number of seats as we go along.
Yeah, as you see how it goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be careful, and I appreciate that. And do you wear masks indoors?
The staff is fully vaccinated, uh-huh. and we will all be wearing masks.
Okay.
But the patrons, since they'll be fully vaccinated, we prefer it, but it's not required.
Okay, so masking. It's an optional choice.
It's an
yeah.
optional choice.
Yeah.
And we're just asking people to maintain distancing in the lobby and when you're leaving.
Yeah.
The auditorium.
Just. We at Carbondale Arts, you know, we've had some exhibits and openings and things like that, and we have discovered that people are very willing and able to manage that. So mm-hmm. I don't think you'll have a problem with it at all. I think everybody's just going to be so excited to
yeah.
be able to come back to the theater. It's going to be so great.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing everybody.
I bet you are.
And tonight's movie, when does that start tonight?
Starts at 7:30. We open at 7:15.
Perfect.
So.
Great.
Get in line.
Get in line.
Get your popcorn.
Get
oh, my
in
gosh.
Line. It's going to be.
Back at the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's super exciting. Well, I am I'm always so excited to be able to go to the Crystal Theater. I'm so grateful for you guys for doing such a great job all these years.
Oh, and we love seeing you when you come.
Yeah, for keeping
you
us,
too, Brian.
Keeping. Actually, I think it's one of the greatest things because it's not just like a regular theater. You know,
yeah.
You bring in so many interesting movies and eclectic things, and it keeps us all more interesting. So thank you mm-hmm. for that. So appreciate
point.
It.
Thank you back.
Yeah. So. What we've got a little extra song that you're going to really appreciate. And thank you guys for coming in. And everybody, go out and support the Crystal Theater. And
yeah,
bring your vaccine cards. Wear your masks if you need to. And we'll see you at the theater.
See you there.
Okay.
Look at our life now. Tattered. and we fight and delight in the tears that we cry until dawn.
Gosh, that was so fun getting to talk about movies and going to the theater. Who doesn't miss that? Jeez. And it's finally time we can get together and do fun things like that. If you didn't hear the song after the interview, it was Toto and Alfredo from Cinema Paradiso. If you haven't seen that movie, super classic. You'll get instantly nostalgic for movie theaters and you'll just race out to the Crystal Theater tonight at 7:30. Coming up next is an interview I had with Liz Farrell and Louise Derrial at Anderson Ranch, and we talk a little bit about their current staff show.
Know that I do, and that this is just one of those games that we play.
Hi, I'm Liz Farrell. I'm the Artistic Director of Painting, Drawing, and Printmaking at Anderson Ranch.
Hi, I'm Louise DeJual. I'm the Studio Coordinator for the Ceramics Department at Anderson Ranch.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to hear a little bit about the current show that's up at your gallery space. And I know it's called You're Never Bigger Than the Hill, and I just need to know more about that.
Well, that's a great question. I'm not exactly sure about the meaning of the show title. However, we did collaborate with Nicola Lees, who's the director of the Aspen Art Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It was a title that she came up with.
Perfect.
And didn't really, in a lot of the, you know, kind of style of curators, didn't really give us an explanation for why. But we liked it. We enjoy it. We think it's got some humor to it.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a show with all the artistic staff at Anderson Ranch, and there are so many of you. And you're both in the show. Can you tell me a little bit about your work?
Yeah, it's a show with all the artistic staff. Nicola came to campus. She did a few visits. We had studio visits with her and showed our work, had conversations, and then she's the one that chose the pieces that are being shown. So for me, she chose two bodies of work. One is the body of work that I call seed pods, which they look like seed pods. They're very organic shapes that have this blue and white glaze on them. And usually how I show them is like each one is their own entity and is on the wall with a lot of space in between them. And Nicola just challenged my way of seeing my work, and she chose a lot of them. I don't even know. I think it's like between 15 and 20 pieces I have in the show.
Wow.
And yeah, it's crazy. And she put all of them on a corner of the gallery on the floor.
On the floor? Well, that's different.
It's very different.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. She even asked like if I felt comfortable. And I feel super like, yeah, of course I do. Because I really like having someone else, you know, that you respect.
Mm-hmm.
And just challenging, like, yeah, let's put all together on the floor. It's So now you walk in the gallery, there's this cluster, and you, it's a different relationship when you look down to the piece. The way I present them usually is like right on your face, so you can step back and have like the whole piece, or you can get really close and see details. But this one, people can get close and see details, but they have to bend and, you know, and they cannot really walk through them. They're really like a cluster.
So right.
It's just interesting to have. So there's a great dialogue between my piece and Esther Nooner's piece, which is also a landscape photography.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Esther's got some pieces in there, too. I forgot. And she is the studio coordinator for Photo and New Media.
She is, absolutely. And one of the exciting things, too, was Nicola, she came to our studios, and she also visited the gallery, and she decided to cover the floor with black AstroTurf.
Whoa.
Which I think was an interesting decision, because our floor is typically these sort of, you know, end grain cut pieces of wood that are much more, they have this sort of, you know, more of the ranch aesthetic as far as architecture.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because she decided to cover that up with and kind of change the space and resurface the walls and just spruce it up. And then she actually, similarly to what she did with Lou, she definitely challenged me as well. She came into my studio, and I typically work pretty small, on a smaller scale. And she saw a test I was doing of some stencil work on some aluminum mesh, and she said, why don't you do that 4x8 feet? And for me, that was actually a challenge that I've never had a curator kind of suggest or dictate, and dictate not in a negative, but sort of the scale of my work. And she really challenged me as well to do that. And I think it was interesting to talk to every artist in there, because I think in some ways she challenged every person. So Leah Agutter, who has, she runs our fabrication lab here at the ranch, made some pieces that would typically go on plinth. And, you know, Nicola chose three of them and had them installed on the floor, directly on the floor, in the similarly to the way that she treated Louise's work. And that was really interesting. And what Louise mentioned about the dialogue that's happening is so true. I think she didn't want it to be a show where we all just kind of threw our work up on the wall next to each other, which can happen in sort of group shows that at times. And she wanted the work to really speak to each other and be very cohesive in the space. And that was an exciting and interesting approach that I think we all appreciated.
Yeah, I feel like it's not probably too often that as artists you get pushed in that direction by someone who has that experience and that knowledge and is comfortable, you know, with those ideas. Is that something you're normally comfortable with, or is it kind of a new, like, it's great to break out of that kind of boundary sometimes?
Yeah, I found like it was an exciting challenge, and it did take me a little bit out of my comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe the placement of Lou's pieces took her out of her comfort level a little bit. And that was actually really great. And it was great for me to see my work on a different scale and installed in a different way.
They make you think about your work and why you make the choices that you do. Like, why do I choose to make this cave and put it on the wall and one by one? It's just like an extra challenge. And when you look at your work in a different angle, I have like many ideas that just came from her choice of how she chose to, you know, to show my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, let's face it, artists are not, it's not usually our strong suit, self-curation. Like, we're great at making bodies of work, and we kind of feel attached to various works based on our own personal experience as artists. And I think it's really exciting when a curator has very definite ideas about how to curate a body of work and to get let it shine in a new light and to give it new meaning. And I think that's a really exciting collaboration that I found to be really invigorating.
Yeah, it takes all the sort of subjective history you've got with your work and then turns it on its head when someone walks in. And plus with a group show, I think that's important anyway, just because it's going to be, you know, relative to other pieces in the room. So that's pretty cool that she can, you know, have the insight to do that. Can you tell me about any of the other artworks in the show?
Absolutely. There is a work by Andrea Wallace, who runs our photography program and is the vice president of artistic affairs, and it's a large-scale figurative photograph of a young boy and a dog in the woods, and it's sort of part of a series that she did of documenting this child throughout his childhood and adolescence. And that's sort of as you walk in. So I'm thinking about as you walk in the gallery, what do you see? That sort of confronts you right away. Then off to the left, Esther Nooner, who is our studio coordinator for photography and new media, did a really amazing piece where she printed out a landscape at a large scale, kind of collaged it together in a somewhat deceiving way to the eye, and allowed it to kind of flow from the ceiling to the floor almost. It's suspended by chains, and it kind of cascades onto the floor.
Oh, wow.
And so that's exciting. And then on one of the back walls is Brian Scher's work, and it's an accordion-folded book that's actually unfolded and pinned to the wall, and it's a landscape orientation of a landscape, so that's great. Uh-huh. And sort of takes up the whole wall in a really wonderful way.
And he's a printmaker, is that right?
Yeah, he's our master printer at Anderson Ranch.
Okay.
And this is actually an ink or watercolor and ink drawing on paper.
Okay.
And then Louise's work, as she described, is sort of down in the corner on the floor, and it's this mass of pods that kind of are really sort of the most, I would say, in numbers of multiples of objects that sort of start to speak to some of the other pieces. And like she mentioned, there are these also kind of landscape cloud paintings on ceramic on the wall opposite that. And then my piece is a piece on metal mesh that involves stencils. So there's a repeat pattern that creates a fence, and it's sort of a mesh on top of a mesh, and kind of speaks to fencing and architecture. So very different styles in this group, very, very. And then there's also Zakria Rabani, and he has a sculpture piece. And the reason I hadn't thought about that immediately is because it's actually, I was visualizing the gallery. His piece is outside, and it's on the wall of the painting building, and it's a large metal fabricated piece that has a lot of humor in it. It really reminds me of some of the sketchbook work that, like, teenagers would do, maybe. And he has a better description of this, but this sort of symbol that's really beautiful and that he's used to create the sort of dynamic shape. The other person I don't want to miss, and the reason it's a more understated piece, it's a little hole in the wall, no pun intended, but a little slot in the wall where you would put a penny through. And Paul Keefe, our studio coordinator for painting, drawing, and printmaking, created this piece where it, how would you describe it, Lou?
I think it's very conceptual, I would say, but it's like it's one wall just for Paul's piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's a white wall that you really have to pay attention. It's just a little hole exactly for a penny, and you just put the penny there, and then on the bottom, on the floor, just under the hole, it's a collection of pennies.
Oh, but, where they come out.
But on the wall, it doesn't really come out.
Oh.
On that bottom, like on the floor.
Whoa.
Get the pennies from the floor to put on the slot.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of,
oh my gosh.
It's a challenging piece, too. It's very smart and funny, also.
Has some humor to it. And it's also very interactive. And it's interesting to see that little slot from all the fingers touching it is starting to, the interaction happening. So that's really nice.
I'll have to bring my pennies when I come check it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's replenishing them. So, you
okay.
know, you know, the pennies are provided.
I see. Oh, that's really fun. That sounds like a really cool show. I really got to get up there. And it's up through, is it July 2nd?
That's a good question. It's possible the show will be extended. I know that was the original dates that it was
okay
for, but We actually kind of postponed the opening slightly, so we'll keep you posted on the website as to how long it will be up, because I believe it will be mid-July. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Do you guys have regular gallery hours for the public to come check it out?
Yeah, 9 to 5. So it's sort of like our store and our front desk, their hours, where it will be unlocked from 9 to 5. So anybody's welcome to come. And then they can also come and view our Still Socially Distanced is the title of our sculpture show out on the grounds as well.
Oh, nice.
It's 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
Perfect. Switching gears for a second, could you take a couple minutes just to like go through some of the summer highlights coming up at the ranch? I know you guys are probably just chock full of fun things. Like you have special talks and workshops, just to give people a taste of what's coming up.
So we have weekly, every Sunday and every Tuesday, we have our faculty that is up here for the week to teach. They give a lecture.
Okay.
So that's something
Sunday and Tuesday.
And just show up 7 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Oh, wonderful.
Every Sunday and Tuesday. And on top of that, we have several other events, and Liz can tell us more about them.
Yeah, and another thing about that that Louise brought up is that we have sort of our standard faculty lectures where we pair two faculty together. They each present their work for, you know, about a half an hour, and we have question and answer. And then on Tuesdays, we're doing a new format where we go into conversation with the faculty. So we have one of the artistic directors will talk with two of the faculty and sort of have a dialogue that's a little more organic and open for audience participation. So it's a really exciting new format that we're doing. Kind of, I think we were really inspired by the online programming we were doing during the pandemic, and we started these conversations that we were doing online, and we were trying to figure out how to keep that vibe going, because there's a certain comfort level that people experience, I think, when they're online versus presenting at a podium with a microphone. Uh-huh, and in some ways, we're trying to kind of, you know, impart that into our audience and let them experience that intimacy. So it's a really wonderful new program. We have a really exciting recognition dinner week here at Anderson Ranch, where we have Simone Lee coming to the ranch and doing a lecture. And we have a series of summer series lectures that sort of begin in July. They tend to be during, traditionally we host them during the lunch hour, so you can keep your eye on the calendar for that weekly program.
Perfect.
It's hard to even, you know, it's interesting that it's a challenge to describe everything we're doing, and I think part of that is because our in-person sort of experience at the ranch has like really changed things for us. So suddenly, like we went from all these online programs and maybe working with some locals and doing, we kept our in-person sort of programming going at a much lesser scale. And suddenly we've hit summer and it feels like we're back to normal. It really does. It's really incredible. So in a way, we're sort of bombarded after a year of kind of being on Zoom and trying to also work in the studios more one-on-one with folks, which has been really lovely. But now we're back to it. And so the level of programming is really exciting, and we have tons of visiting artists coming all summer long. So come to campus, check it out. You know, there's always something going on. We also have a YouTube channel, which Lou pointed out to me, and it's a good point that, you know, you can search some of these lectures and happenings that are going on. We stream some of them, and some of them are recorded. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well.
That's a great idea. How do people find the campus if they haven't come up to visit you before?
So depending on whether they're coming from Aspen or Down Valley, we're located in Snowmass Village, and you can either take Brush Creek or Owl Creek Road, and we are nestled behind the fire station in Snowmass Village and sort of between the fire station and the Snowmass Chapel, and that's a great kind of way to come into the campus. We have a parking lot there and then a huge sort of gate entryway that's very welcoming, and you can walk in and you'll see the art and the artists right away, and we stand out for sure.
Yeah, and if you haven't been, it's such a special experience just to come. It's like a, you know, state-of-the-art facility, and everyone always, there's always so much happening, and everyone's so nice, and there's so much talent. So I really encourage folks to go check out this show, the sculptures around, and hopefully just, you know, poke your head in and walk around the campus. It's just a beautiful spot.
Thank you.
Yeah, anything else you want to say before we head out?
Our website has a lot of information.
Yeah, what is your website?
AndersonRanch.org, and Lou brings up a good point. We have a new website. It's really exciting, and you can go and really search all these events and that we've sort of thrown out at you and told you a little bit about. But you can go there and take a look and get more information.
That's so great. I'm excited, and thank you so much, you both, for taking time today.
Thank you so much, Brian, for interviewing us.
Yeah.
It's great to talk to you.
The trap you'd and to use you before you even know. For love is blind and you're far too kind. Don't ever let it show. I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was stronger, the can-can such a pretty show.
Right. I wish I knew now what I know when I was younger. Hi, this is Amy Kimberly here with you. I have overtaken the airwaves, and I am here with Luke Nessler.
Luke? Hi, Amy.
Hi, Luke. Wow.
How are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
Pretty good. It's really weird to be on this side of the microphone.
I know. Luke, for those of you that don't know, really created Express Yourself and oversaw it for how many years?
I think it was 12.
12 years. Wow. But now we have Luke working on another project, which is going to debut on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, the 29th at 4 p.m. and is going to run every Tuesday up until Mountain Fair, as well as a few additional times. It is the 50 Years of Fair podcast.
How about that? 50 years. Can you believe it?
It's so hard to believe. How many years have you been going to the fair, Luke?
My first fair was 1980.
Wow.
And I think I might have missed a couple in there. And then starting in 2004, when I started working at KDNK, I was involved with recording the fair every year. And I've also been involved in the drum circle.
That's right. I have lots of great pictures of you at the drum circle. So let's talk a little bit about this podcast, because it's something that Luke and I have been working on since really January, I think, is when we really kicked in with it, meeting every Wednesday night for interviews. And then Luke has really just held all that content, plus all the years of Katie and Kay's content, and is creating a podcast. Can you talk a little bit about what it's taken to put this together?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, we talked to 30 people. I was just counting this afternoon. So that's 30 people, all of them incredibly articulate and boisterous and wonderful recollections of Mountain Fair. And even going back to the very beginning, of course, we talked to Lori Loeb and Wick Moses and Barb Bush. We talked to both police chiefs during that tenure. Well, I don't know when Fred started. I think Fred Williams might have started about 83 or something. So I don't know who was police chief before that, but we have lots of audio from Fred Williams and also Gene Schilling, both of whom were police chiefs for many years in Carbondale. Really nice to get their perspective on the Mountain Fair. We talked to the founder, of course, Lori Loeb. We talked to all these super volunteers that have been involved with Mountain Fair for so many years.
Well, go
ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, not only people that have been involved since the beginning, but we also talked to kids that grew up with the fair and are now involved. And we've talked with the next generation of people that are starting to take on responsibilities. So it was a wide range.
Yes, it was. And then aside from the interviews, we've been digging deep into other archives. For example, that wonderful show that Mary Ferguson used to do on KDNK. In 1989, she interviewed Brad Hendricks on her show, This I Remember. And that particular half hour has yielded a lot of gems for us, because Brad was very involved with the Mountain Fair, building the early stages, and then also involved on a board level with Carbondale Arts and the Mountain Fair. So lots of really good audio from him. And then, of course, we talked to two of his daughters, who are among the people that you just mentioned, who grew up with the fair and later in their lives took on pretty significant duties at the Mountain Fair.
Yeah, and I loved, as we talked to some of these people, like the Hendricks girls, they said, oh, the Mountain Fair, we were the freest. I mean, it was pretty much our parents would take us to the park and just set us free, and we felt like nobody was watching us, and we could do whatever we wanted. And now that we're older, we realize that there was probably hundreds of eyes on us, but we still did whatever we wanted. Those are the kind of that's kind of the magic of the Mountain Fair. And another thing that really stuck with me in all those interviews, Luke, was when we asked people, like, how's the fair changed and how's it stayed the same? And, you know, when you start something, a lot of times as the years go on, you feel the newcomers, you feel kind of, sometimes you get bitter, sometimes you feel like it's lost its spirit. And not one person expressed that. You know, it was so interesting. Some people would say, well, maybe I don't spend as much time at the fair as I used to. Maybe I don't do as many drugs, let's say, as I used to or something. But everyone felt that the spirit had really been retained.
Yeah, you know, all of them mentioned that it's got more crowded. Well, that's a big duh. But, you know, the greatest thing about it is that the spirit has remained the same. For 50 years, that's a remarkable achievement. And I think you can probably chalk that up to the fact that it's dedicated people who are putting the Mountain Fair on.
That's right. Now, let's talk about the different episodes.
Okay. That first episode we're calling In the Beginning, and that's where Well, it goes back to the beginning. We have reminiscences from Lori Loeb, the mother of the Mountain Fair. Wick Moses was involved from the very beginning. Brad Hendricks, Juan Leach, the former fire chief, Barb Bush, all those folks who helped get the Mountain Fair up and running. Tom Fulker, there's another one.
Yeah, Peggy DeVilbiss, they're all there.
Peggy DeVilbiss, yeah. And that's what that first one's all about. And, you know, one of the questions that we asked just about every person we talked to, Amy, was, you know, it's pretty obvious to most folks that the Mountain Fair is more than just a party. There's something about it. And every single person we talked to had just a really beautiful, articulate explanation for that, because that's really an unusual thing, mm-hmm. if you think about it. And so to have all of these intelligent, articulate people talking about that kind of really important stuff is very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. And then the second episode?
Second episode is turning into a really long one because there's so much involved with growing up. That's what we're calling episode two, growing up. And that's where we'll talk about Thomas Wally and the you know, all the things that go on at Mountain Fair, the Green Team, the Peace Patrol, cops in tie-dye, the
security.
Fireball. Oh,
yeah.
We discovered a story, Amy, about the fireball that is probably going to surprise a lot of people. I didn't know about it. I don't think you did either, did you?
No.
So that's going to be, we're not sure actually if that'll be in episode two, but there's an interesting explanation for the fireball. Let's just say that there's so much involved with putting on the Mountain Fair, and that's what episode two focuses on, all those things that allowed it to blossom forth.
And then we have another episode. Well, we have two episodes that are going to just be primarily on the music of Mountain Fair. And those, one is going to air on the 16th, on the Friday, the 16th, which is Express Yourself. We're going to give up our hour here for 1 hour of Mountain Fair music. And then Sunday evening, the 18th, will be another hour of music at 7 p.m. of the fair and stories, and we have a lot of interviews with musicians as well as memorable moments for people that we interviewed from the fair, and then tons of stuff from Katie and Kay. So those two episodes should be really fun.
Looking forward to putting those together for sure.
Yeah, and then we have one on
competition.
Yay!
Somebody that we talked to along the way said that it was a non-competitive competition. And how that's like a perfect Carbondale thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what we've discovered, delving into the wood splitting and the pie contest. Oh, my God, the pie people are serious. They are serious. Not just the contestants, but the judges.
That's right. And some of them have been judges since the beginning, like Jim Ryan. You know, I think he's been a judge pretty much since the beginning. So, of course, they're serious. They are not giving up their seats.
No, and understandably so, because listening to the recordings of the pie contest results that are read on KD&K, where they tell the winners each year who won the pie and who won the cake. I mean, just listening to those makes your mouth water.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have two more that may not air before the festival, but will be part of the podcast. And you will be able to download the podcast after we get through all of this. Eventually, you'll be able to download the podcast from iTunes and from other avenues. But we are going to do a podcast right after the fair as well, because we're going to collect more stories and voices at the fair. And we've got one segment that's going to air around the challenges of the fair. And another that is called The Next Generation.
right, Amy. And, you know, I really want to invite people to come and find me at the Carbondale History booth at the Mountain Fair in Sulphur's Park this year, because I will be recording all these stories, as well as wandering around the fair, getting recollections that way. So I really want to invite people to come on down and tell me your story.
Well, that is wonderful. Thank you so much, Luke. So everybody, please do tune in this Tuesday at 4 for the first episode of 50 Years of Fair. All right, Luke, we got to jump, but thank you so much for being part of this and being with us and working so hard.
Thanks for the opportunity, Amy.
All right. Have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come up, baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Opening doors and pulling some strings.